ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, author of How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women in various ministry contexts having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. My guest today is Carla Sibley. Carla has been married to Carlos for 33 years, and they live in Watkinsville, Georgia, where Carlos has pastored Watkinsville First Baptist for 23 years. Carlos and Carla have 5 children, ranging in age from 19 to 30, and they have 1 granddaughter that Carla describes as perfect. Carla joins me today on the podcast to talk about the silent but deadly sin that we all face at one point or another in ministry, comparison and competition. I asked Carla about how she's seen comparison and competition rise up in her own heart, how she responds when she identifies those things in herself, and what wisdom she would offer us as we fight these terrible sins. Here, friends, is my conversation with Carla Sibley. Well, I'm super excited to get to know and to introduce to my listeners Carla Sibley. Hi, Carla.
Hello.
I wish you said more because we could hear that little Georgia accent coming out. We're going to get to hear it.
You're going to get a lot of it, yeah.
Yes. Where do you live in Georgia?
We live in Watkinsville, Georgia. It is sometimes referred to as the bedroom community of Athens, Georgia, where the University of Georgia is. Go Dogs. But it is actually its own place. It's become well-known in our state because we have really great schools. But it is a tiny little town.
Yeah. You have really great schools? Is that what you said?
Yes. Our school system is extremely strong. Usually number one in the state in testing scores. So.
Oh my! Well, everybody's going to move to Watkinsville, Georgia now.
They are. They're coming in droves. Yeah. It's a sweet place to live. It's a very Mayberry-ish, even though it has grown exponentially even since we've been here. It still is a really sweet place to live. So we love it.
Did you grow up in Georgia?
No. I'm an Alabamian.
I
lived the first half of my life in Alabama, and I went to school there, met my husband in school, and then married. He pastored, he went to seminary in West Tennessee, and then our first pastorate was in East Tennessee. So we've covered the state of Tennessee, east to west, and then we've been here 20 years.
Wow.
3 years. So.
Wow. Okay, so I said the Georgia accent, but maybe you have picked up along the way. You have Alabama, you have Tennessee, and you have Georgia, maybe?
Yeah, probably all three. Yeah, a good mixture. Yeah. East Tennessee was definitely more distinct. And here in Georgia, we distinguish between Upper Georgia and Lower Georgia. Below the Nat line, they have their own way of saying everything. So that's down in South Georgia. So.
Okay. Well, I'm not familiar. I have things to learn, I guess. Well, tell me about y'all's context of where you're serving and what is your husband's role and what do you enjoy doing at the church?
Our context, I kind of told you a little bit about that. If you turn left out of our church parking lot, you will run into neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood of young families. We have lots and lots and lots of young families who come to this area for our school system. And then if you turn right out of our parking lot, in 10 minutes, you'll be in the center of campus at UGA. So 35,000 plus college students, that direction. And so our church, to me, is a really good mix of those two. Probably more families than students, but still a really large student contingency. And then a lot of young families.
I love it.
Really a neat thing. Really a neat place to live. Unique.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. It's really great. We love the mix. We love the, And it's funny because the older people older than me, the older people come to our church because they love the life that the younger ones bring. So it's really, really a sweet spot. Yeah.
And your husband's a lead pastor, correct?
He's lead pastor. He's been a senior pastor since he graduated from seminary.
Oh, wow.
So at 25, he became the pastor of a church, and that was something.
Yeah.
And really just did not know anything. I just felt really lost. And so he pastored his first church for 8 years, and then here for 23. We've been blessed to only be in two places. We're kind of a bloom where we're planted kind of place, and people. Those are the kind of people we are. Love to just get to know the people and just sink in deep. And we've been able to do that. We're so grateful for that.
Yeah.
Only great. Having two churches has been really, really a blessing. Yeah.
That's great.
For me, what do I love doing in the church? Well, I've done a lot of things in the church, not all things that I really loved. I love the church.
Yes.
I love the church. I love the Lord. So I love his church. So because of that, I've served in a lot of different areas. We went to our first church and we were it. He was the only pastoral staff. And you're nodding your head, so I'm assuming you know what that's like. Most pastors' wives have been there at some point in their tenure. For us, it was right off the gate and we were it. And so we were doing VBS. We were, I started a ladies ministry, a men's ministry he started. Everything that happened, we kind of started it there in a way. There was a great group of people. There were only about 120 people there when we got there. And as I said, no other pastoral staff. And so it was a lot. So we did everything. Yep. I did all kinds of things that I didn't know I could do.
Yeah.
I didn't play the piano, but I did everything else.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful. And we learned a lot. By the time we left that church, it was much larger. So we had other help, and I wasn't doing quite as many things. I was working more in ladies ministry. I was also having babies.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved to Georgia, and we started all over. So we left a church of about 400 by that time to come back to another church of 120. So it's like we started right back over again. And so once again, he was the only pastoral staff. And so we started over kind of learning to do what needed to be done.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned starting out and not knowing what you were doing. And I think that is when, for me, I started looking around at that same thing. I felt the same thing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so I know these other pastors' wives in the community. And so I looked around and I saw what they were doing. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do that. Like, I'm going to imitate them. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, I learned a lot from them. But one of the things that I started recognizing in myself during those early years, especially, was sinful comparison. I look at them and I think, well, and first of all, these women were much more experienced. I mean, they had so many more years under their belt. I don't know why I thought I could compare apples to apples. But I would compare and I would think, oh, I need to – like, I'm not good enough, or even sometimes maybe, well, I'm doing it better than them. Maybe I know, you know, and so there's sinful comparison that started to creep up. Have you ever experienced that in ministry? And if so, can you just rolled your eyes, although nobody could see it, but I saw it.
I can see that, thank goodness.
Have you ever struggled with that? And if so, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's easy to look over the fence and think, you know, for a while you're just so happy and excited, especially as a new pastor's wife. This was, I'm speaking 30 years plus back to that young girl who was, you know, you're looking around, you're so excited to be in our church. Like, we yes. finally had our church. And that was a thrill, a minute. And but then it doesn't take very long for that thing you just talked about. You look over the fence and you're like, well, look what they're doing over there. Why don't we do that? Or, you know, why can't I do that? Or I can be like her. I mean, she's doing, as you said, we begin to like look at women who, especially are way down the road from us. I had a couple of mentors, you know, they might not have even realized they were mentoring me, but they were. And I had a couple of those and followed them and thought, oh gosh, you know, she's doing this. And then I'd come back to my church and think, well, she has a really large budget. You know, there were just so many things I was limited by, and that could lead to frustration, feeling bad about where I was, a lot of things. And honestly, you know, this is 30 years later, I can still see how that could creep in. Like I recognize it now when it comes in, and I know the end result of that, that discontent that it breeds, that ingratitude. And even bitterness that can work its way into your heart before you even know it. So now I recognize it quicker and nip it in the bud a lot quicker. I have certain steps, I guess you could say, that I just kind of do in my heart and my mind, and we can talk about that in a little bit.
Yes.
But just ways that I kind, things that I kind of now automatically go to that I didn't know then. I didn't even recognize what I was doing then. And so my heart really goes out to younger pastors' wives. I never want them to even look at me and think she's got it all together and look at her church is this and doing this. And of course she can do that. And she gets to travel. And because those are the feelings I used to have, you know, for women that were ahead of me, been doing it longer than I have.
Yeah.
So I get that. I get
yeah.
it.
Well, can you tell us about, you said you've learned to recognize it quicker now. What should we be looking for where we know that something is turning, maybe, you know, like a little more sinister comparison?
I think that really just notice what you're talking about. If I'm saying things like, well, hon, why don't we, especially to my husband, why don't we do this? Why don't? If you're starting it off with why don't we, that's a really good clue that you've kind of stepped into a little bit of comparison.
That's good.
Which has led to discontent and ingratitude. And I think those are just watching your words, your feelings. Do you find yourself sitting in a service or going to an event and criticizing instead of recognizing all the really good? Are you just noticing all the details? Some of us are really detail oriented, and we do that in every situation. That can cross over into sinful. So it's like you have to just know yourself. I know that I'm detail oriented. And so I know going in that I can notice every little thing, the lighting, the sound, the music, that song. Did she quote that scripture correctly? This, that, you know, just, I mean, I can just pick it to pieces if I want to. So I know that about myself. So the minute I feel that coming on, I just shut it down. I'm like, apps, who am I? Who am I to judge my sister? And just begin to remind myself how wonderful, you know, this is that I'm at, that, you know, this event that I'm at. Oh, this is wonderful. Oh, you know, what is the Lord going to say to me here? And just catching it quicker and stopping it.
Yeah. What is the, you mentioned that you kind of have something you talk yourself through. Can you lead us through that?
It's funny. I jotted those down because I was thinking about that earlier. I kind of have a couple little things that I do. One is to stop looking around. And by looking around, I mean that world that has been a part of the latter part of my time in ministry. And that is the social media aspect of looking, scrolling. I'm not on that many things. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. However, I'm not actually on Facebook. I post to Facebook, but I rarely get on Facebook. Every once in a while, you know, somebody will say, hey, I messaged you. And I'm like, text me or call me. Don't message me. I'm not going to get it. I hate that because I just can't handle. So I know how much I can handle.
Yeah.
I have a limit on Facebook, a 15-minute limit. I mean, not on Facebook, on Instagram. I have a limit that I set, a 15-minute, because I know myself. If I go too far into looking at all the wonderful things that everybody's doing, I'll step over that line. And I just know that about myself. So I have to limit myself. So stop looking around is the first thing. And then, so that's the negative part of what I do. I say, okay, you got to shut some things down. And then I really have to hone in on these things. And that's the first thing, is to focus on Jesus. Going back, reminding myself that thing that we do daily, you know, of just reminding ourselves of the grace we have stepped into, of what was done for me in my place. I'm sorry, I know my voice is going. What was purchased for me is so much more than anything earthly, anything temporary. And so I don't have to cling to those things I think I need or want, or the accomplishments, the recognition. I just don't have to have it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we forget that we don't have to have it. And so I just look to Jesus, spend more time in the Word, spend more time thinking on Him, listening to things that will draw my heart to Him. So it's a negative of shutting out the world. It's a positive of focusing on Jesus. And then the other thing is to look around, not look around, look with gratitude at where He has placed me.
Yeah.
So once I look to Him and I'm reminded of all of that, all that was granted me in Him, then I can look where I am and be like, oh my goodness, this is a wonderful place. And I begin to see with new eyes, with grateful eyes, everything around me, and just begin to assess, okay, Lord, You've put me here. Show me what You see. Help me love the way You love. Show me where You can use me here. Mm-hmm. And so it's putting on blinders. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't always live there, but there are times in my life when I can tell I'm stepping into that water of discontent. And I just, that these are the things that pull me back. I just know I need to shut down that outside world for just a little bit. I need to focus on Jesus, and then I need to open my eyes afresh to where I am.
Yes, that's so good. Because when we do that, we realize there's so much opportunity. There's more than enough opportunity right where I am. And if I'm, a lot of times I will also sometimes I will follow that train of thought all the way to the end. So, okay, let's say I do get that thing that person has that I would like, or, you know, let's say I do whatever it is that I think would be best for me that the Lord hasn't given me. And then I think about, well, that woman down the street that I'm comparing myself, or that church that I'm comparing myself to, our church, they also have issues, problems, struggles. That doesn't mean that all of a sudden I'm going to be just swimming in rainbows and ponies if I get those things. And so
it's not for sure.
And so when I think about it like that, it helps me to see kind of the end, that it's not, I'm not going to be satisfied then. There'll always be something else. Mm-hmm. And so my contentment, I think of Psalm 23, and the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. You know, my contentment is within the boundaries He has laid for me. And and so that is truly life and abundance. And that's what He's called me to. And so if I can kind of talk myself, like, go down that trail, but then find it's not in the end. That's not actually what I want. I really do want Jesus, and I want to be where He has me, because that's where contentment is.
Right. And yet, like you touched on that, your perception of what another person's life is like is never correct. It's never mm-hmm. full. You don't know that whole person's life years ago. So for 15 years, I did Bible studies in my home on Wednesday nights for just college women, because that part of our church began to grow. And so I moved from working in one area to working with college students. And so I would go to college Sunday school, be in college Bible studies. And then I led a Bible study, 15 years of girls coming through my home. And it would be as few as 10 and as many as 65. I don't know. It was a lot. I do not have a large home. So it was not a lot of space, and they were crammed in and sitting on top of each other and sitting in the hall. And it was
I beautiful. Love that.
Because we would open the Word and we'd just dig in every week and we'd share our hearts, and I shared my life with them. And now they're scattered all around the globe. And I'll get calls from girls who were here 20 years ago and just, you know, my husband's making me crazy. Tell me what I need to do. How do I, you know, respond kindly and respectfully? And, you know, just that. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But I'll never forget this one girl. She came in and she was just the girl with the plan. You know, she just knew exactly what she wanted. She had the 5-year plan. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I'm not going to say her name. I might have to tell her that she's been brought in on this podcast. But she is, she had just a great plan. She was very driven, lots of goals. But I remember one night in Bible study, she said, "I just want your life. I just want your life. Like, I love your life. I want to be married to a pastor like Pastor Carlos, and I want 5 children, and I want this home, and I just want your life. Ministry with college girls, I just think it's wonderful." And I was like, "Really? Do you want all of my life? Because you don't get to pick and choose. It's not like you just get to say, I want this part of your life, but I don't want the fact that you lost your mom at 34 when you were still having babies. And that was really hard. And then you know, just the things that you've never lived close to the family. You've always had to do it, just depend on whoever you could get to help. And, you know, I said, really, do you want all the hard things? Do you want all of it? Because you don't get to choose just the good things. And so we do that when we look at other women at other churches. We're like, oh, well, they've got this big old church and they've got all this money to do. I'll never forget a lady that I followed. And she was, this was before social media. So I followed her because I knew her. I actually knew the person.
Yeah.
In a mega church. And I was in little B church. And she was having, they would have these deep meals at her home almost every Sunday, where different groups would come in. And it was just like, oh, this is such a great thing that you bring every group and you bring these groups into your home. Like, this week it's going to be the 7th grade boys. And next week it's going to be senior adults. And then it was just that kind of stuff. And then I found out that the church had her house cleaned for her. And then all the meals were catered. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a whole different thing. And, you know, so it was like, I can't compare that. These are not comparisons. So,
yes.
Anyway, well, you don't have perception.
Yeah. That brings up a good point, because I think one of the things that's really helped me in this area, I mentioned that this was more of a struggle when I was younger, because I was brand new to ministry. I didn't know myself. I didn't know to look at certain things like the context I'm in, as you mentioned, the church that I'm in, the financial situation, the budget, if you're having babies, I had a child with special needs, like all of these things they impact what we're able to do and what we are good at and gifted to do. So I wasn't looking at that saying, what has God specifically gifted me to do? And what context has he had me in to use those gifts? I'm looking at other women who have different gifts and different contexts and trying to make that fit into mine. And so it just that's not the way God made it to be, right? And so I would love for you to talk about how you have figured those things out for yourself, as far as, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to give my time to. I'm not going to try to imitate so-and-so down the road, even though they're doing good things. How did you figure that out?
I'm probably the least capable to answer this question, but I'll give it a go. I am not one of the things that some of the women around here tease me about is I'm not very self-aware. I need to be more so. I tend to forget myself in public. And so, because I get so excited to be around people and things, and I want to talk to everybody in the room, and I want to have long conversations with each person, and just all the things. So I'm not super aware of what people might think about me. Like, once I get in the room, it's about them. And so I forget about me, and I might border on ridiculous most of the time, maybe even step over the line of ridiculous. And so I'm not super aware of where I'm gifted and where I'm not. I do know that I've walked with Christ for a long time. And I think that just that we grow in an understanding of him. And then in turn, we grow in an understanding of what he put us here for. Over time, like I think you said that, it's like I look back at the younger me, I think I had an inflated view of both my giftings and my failings back then. Because I was just in this search for significance, trying to find my place in the world. And then the longer you walk with Christ, that just that long obedience in the same direction. Thank you, Eugene Peterson. Just it kind of gives you this realization that, yeah, there are some areas where I might be strong. Like I love teaching. I loved doing it. And then when you begin to get some people in your life that say, hey, you know, I love that. That was really helpful when you did this, or I learned a lot when you taught. And the more you do it, then you recognize, okay, that might be an area that I'm strong. And so I need to develop that. How can I learn to be better at that? Who can I talk to help me with that? There are so many resources now. I mean, so many of our seminaries, our Southern Baptist seminaries are offering classes to wives, really cheap, and some of them are free, just to help, just to say, hey, here's how to teach the Bible. Here's an Old Testament survey. We have so many resources now. But that's one thing, is just recognizing little areas where others have affirmed and where you actually love doing it. So that's wonderful when you start to recognize those areas and you really want to develop that to help the kingdom. But then also just being willing to work even in areas where you're not especially gifted. I am not a children's person. I like to teach adults. Yes, I had 5 children. And yes, I did homeschool them for a long time. But that's different. And but I never really was that person who said, I'll go teach in the children's department. I'll go hold babies. Yes, I'll give my week at VBS. I'll teach at VBS. But that, because, you know, I could focus in and just give all my energy to just doing this, you know, class for VBS. But then an opening came up 3 years ago, and I knew I was free. I just finished teaching course, and I wasn't teaching a course that semester. And our children's pastor, I was like, you need any help over there? And he was like, actually, yes, I need someone in kindergarten boys and girls for the first hour. So I started doing that. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. I opened my mouth and asked if you needed help, and you've told me, and I have to do it. So I did it, and it has become a delight. It is not, as I said, what I consider my gifting, but what it has made me, it's made me a better teacher, because all of a sudden I have to come up with these 4 great theological truths in this one lesson, and I have to somehow get it down to 3 sentences that can be said in 5 minutes. You have this really short attention span, but and surround it with a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, to help them understand it. But it's been great for me. And I didn't know, I would have not chosen that had I just said, no, that's not my gifting, I'm not going there. I just think that, especially speaking to younger pastors' wives or pastors' wives in smaller churches, work where the need is, just help. And sometimes you might find something that you didn't realize.
That's right.
It was a gifting. And in the meantime, you're just helping the kingdom. So,
that's right. That's good. I like how you put that. Time is a big one. And just trying stuff. Just serving where you can. And that's how I learned more of who God made me to be. And I would say I'm just now in my 40s really going, okay, I think I'm pretty sure what I'm called to do within this, and what I'm just not as called to or not as gifted for, and I want to help other people do that, but it's not for me.
So, and you appreciate people who are doing it
then. Yes,
like
yes.
You're like, hey, I know what you're doing is really hard, and so I'm just gonna pray for you and support you, and how can I be a support to you?
That's good. Well, one of the things that I want to ask you about in regards to comparison is about your husband. So sometimes I have compared myself with my husband. And that is something that I think pastors' wives could feel, especially women who might not know what are they supposed to do. And they see their husbands being really, really good at what they do. And it's very clear for them, and sometimes getting adulation for that. And as pastors' wives, it can feel, I think sometimes when we're unsure, we can feel very much in the shadow, and it can create some division, at least in our hearts toward our husbands. So I'm wondering if you've ever experienced that and how you've dealt with that.
It's funny. I don't consider myself very competitive out in other arenas. In my home, that's probably the area where I felt the most competitive. I don't know why I felt like I always needed to somehow went up Carlos. He's Mr. Perfect. I'm married to Mr. Perfect. He's kind, thoughtful, very gifted, so much smarter than people even know he is because he's real humble. He doesn't come across as the smart guy. But just all of those things that I'm not. Like he's never, ever speaks before he thinks. And I'm like, how do you do that? How do you understand that? That's just so weird to me. Because I'm married to Mr. Perfect, I was always trying to prove that somehow I was just as good as Mr. Perfect. Anyway, so yes, that created a lot of competition within the home, and it's not a good thing. We are supposed to be on the same team. That's the whole point of us getting married. Yes, that's something that I have definitely struggled with. And then again, you know, back in the raising the babies, I keep thinking towards younger women, and I'm like, in the years of raising babies, we had 5 and 10 years, and there were some real struggles during those years. Lost my mom, as I said, so went through some really hard things during those years. And yet, Carlos is going to Turkey, going to, you know, just traveling the world and doing all the things. And did I mention that after we had 5 kids, he decided to go back and get his doctorate in Austin? I mean, I was like, you're going to go where? You know, okay. So he did his doctoral work in Boston. It took him 6 years to write that thing. So it's what is it? 3 years of classes. And then it took him 4 years of classes and 3 years of writing or something like that. Anyway,
a lot.
It's all a blur.
Yeah.
Complete blur to me. Because as I said, I was raising 5 kids. And did I mention no family in the state, you know, the whole 9 yards. So, not bitter, but, but anyway, so, you know, there are just times that, you know, I would want to say, well, I'm working harder than you're working, or he would feel probably like he was working harder than I was. He never said those things. It was me. I was always the one. There was this recognition. I remember this point though, of recognition of realizing that I feel like I'm competing with him and have been working now for years to try to combat that because the enemy really got a foothold. And so once you've allowed him in, you then have that fight to get back out, to shove that foot back out. So, I'm still at that point because I can feel that rise up in me at any time, that competitiveness. There was a point I remember, in an argument because yeah, we argue. From time to time. Never happens at your house, I'm sure, but it does at our house. And we were in an argument and it dawned on me. I just recognized, oh wait, we're competing with each other here. And also I said out loud to him, you do realize that God loves me just as much as he loves you. Because I mean, he's a great guy, you know, but I needed to say that for him to know that because he might've been feeling a little bit smug at that moment. And I needed to hear it. I needed to be reminded, Carla, your value does not lie in, you know, all the things that you're measuring yourself by.
Yes.
And it was really helpful. It was a really great Holy Spirit eye-opening moment for me. And, that's what I want to go toward now. I want to go toward who I am in Christ. I'm unique. There's nobody else like me. So I want to say to all the younger pastors' wives, all pastors' wives, you are unique. You're designed. You can say that to other people, but we need to take it in to ourselves. It needs to become a part of who we are. That we were here. We're here for a purpose. We have gifts and callings, ways that we can make an impact on the kingdom. No matter where we are.
Yes. And that we're loved not based upon what we do. Yes. And, it, you know, I think when I've struggled with comparison and competition, it's because I'm looking at what I'm doing or what other people are doing. And I'm not even going close to thinking about Jesus and what he's done for me and who he has made me. Yes. And there's nothing to add to that, you know, based upon what I do. But
time to study Romans again.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think there's so much division that can happen. I've seen it in my own life. You know, when I've given into comparison and competition, it has caused division. It has hurt relationships. Mm. And it ends up hurting me.
All it does, yeah.
And so I think this is a way that I don't know if maybe – I just don't feel like a lot of times we talk about it that much in terms of ministry and pastors' wives. But I think this is one of the most sinister ways – sinister or easy ways for the enemy to come in and to bring division in marriage, in churches, but also from church to church. And I've seen that, especially in church planting. I remember just looking around and because you feel like you're trying to make something happen, and you look around and you see people that are quote unquote having it easier than you, or it's happening faster, or they're doing this incredible thing that you never even thought of. And it can create this just, like I would just have a tug of war in my heart sometimes. And so I'd love for you to talk about that too, like competition with other churches in your area and how divisive that can be.
It's awful. Yeah, that's really awful. You know, it's so funny. Recently we were at a banquet or some sort of dinner. There were people across the table from us, and Carlos, my husband, somebody started talking about that they go to this other church in our town that's, we're very similar size church in our town, and they've gotten a new pastor. And I mean, he's been here 5 years. So everything kind of came right before COVID, I'm guessing. So kind of a blur as to how long he's been here, 5 years maybe. And they have become really close friends, just comrades in arms. It's really beautiful. So this guy began to say, oh, we love our pastor and da-da-da-da-da. And Carlos is like, oh my goodness, I'm so thankful God brought him to town. And he's a really great speaker, teacher. And Carlos began to say, yeah, he's been a gift to me. He's a great brother. And then he stopped for a minute and he said, I wrote it down because I couldn't remember what he said. He said, I'm glad we're not in the car business. And what he was saying was, we're actually teammates. Yeah. We're not competitors. And he's like, because of this beautiful realm in which we get to work, it's not about who has bigger sales. It's about there's one kingdom, right, and there's one team. And so I'm trying to learn from my husband and his way of approaching that, his way of keeping himself from feeling competitive. If you ask him, how do you do that? How do you combat that? And he says, transparency with other pastors. So when he's with a guy that that his church is doing some really cool things or whatever, he asks all our questions like, tell me about that. Instead of like, oh, let me tell you what we do. That's so awesome. We're awesome too. You know, it's like, he really just leans in and says, tell me about that, man, that's awesome. And then he'll say, well, we tried this thing once and it was a flop. And, or we were thinking about what we were going to do. Like, he just tells everybody our plans, what we're thinking on the horizon. I mean, he's just really transparent. He's like, they can ask me any question. And he says that keeps him from feeling it helps him to recognize we're on the same team. We're helping each other. A win for any other church is a win for the kingdom. Mm. And I'm learning from that. I want to follow his lead.
That's really good. I love that.
One thing that I think you mentioned a minute ago about being a tool of Satan, how competition can be a tool. Yeah,
for sure.
I think the biggest tool there is that we believe we deserve an upgrade. Why is it that we believe we deserve an upgrade? Why are we always looking at the one who's doing it bigger and better than we are and think that we need that? We deserve that. As opposed to looking at the young woman who's serving in Timbuktu, you know, who's serving in small town, small church, low budget, you know, all the things. And instead of looking to her and thinking she deserves what we have. You know what I'm saying? It's like we always consider ourselves as in deserving an upgrade. Years ago, we were on a mission tour to Guatemala City, working deep in the city in the worst area where people are living in shanties, you know, thousands upon thousands in shanties. And I was able to go into the home of one family, and the mom had 5 children and similar ages to my children. And she had a dirt floor and 1 light bulb hanging down and 1 potty. And she was doing it. She was just doing it. She's keeping children alive. She's feeding them. She's caring for them. She loved the Lord. And she was teaching them about Jesus. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did she get there? And I'm here. I didn't choose where I was born, nor did she. Why do I think I deserve an upgrade? Why don't I have what she has? And so that picture has played out in my mind 1,000 times in the past 30 years of just, why do I think I deserve an upgrade? Mm-hmm. So I think that's something we need to constantly say to ourselves when the enemy comes in with that thought. Don't you wish you had what she had? Don't you wish your church could do what her church does? Don't you wish your husband was like her husband? What you think her husband is like? Especially in this day and age of presenting the best picture to the whole world all the time, things are not always what they seem. And so, just not thinking that we deserve the upgrade.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, for women out there who are listening and they're going, oh, like there is this in me. And I would say it's in all of us. This is in me. You're saying this is in you. This is something we have to fight, and we have to remind ourselves of what's true over and over and over. And so I just would love for you to close us with, what would you say to that woman listening out there who's like battling comparison or competition?
I think it's make a decision. Do you want to be an instrument in the hand of the enemy for the destruction of the kingdom? Or do you want to be an instrument in the hand of God for the building up of his kingdom? And which end do you want for your life? What do you want to be said about you at the end of your life? She was an instrument of righteousness and peace and joy for the kingdom of God, not an instrument of bitterness and angst and ingratitude for the kingdom of Satan. Mm-hmm. So it's a decision that we make really every single time the thought pops in our head, or we just have to decide right then, oh Lord, forgive me, repent of that and turn from it. And continually, and the more we do it, the better we'll get at it. The more we exercise that muscle of gratitude and humility, the more we'll be able to do this. It'll come quicker each time.
Yeah.
Study Romans. He proved his own love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Remind yourself, it wasn't anything lovely in you that drew him to you. It was his love for me that pushed him toward me. And that's enough. That's enough to remind me, oh my goodness, I've got a job to do. Mm-hmm. I've got a wonderful person to serve. Yes. And just keep reminding ourselves that maybe I make notes and stick them on my mirrors to remind me of just these thoughts, because I know, you know, the moment you open your eyes in the morning, the enemy is on you. And, to my dear sisters, he wants us. He wants us. If he can get to us, he's got the pastor. He's got the pastor's kids. He's got the deacons. He's got your elders and leadership team. He's got everybody. If he can get you, he can crumble a lot of people. So don't let him have it. Don't be a tool in the
hand. That's so good. Thank you, Carla, for sharing with us.
You are so welcome. It was a delight to meet you.
Thanks for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. I would love to hear from you. We are creating an episode full of our listeners' funniest or most embarrassing moments in ministry. Record and send your story to me at the link in the show notes. And don't forget, if you found this content helpful, please rate and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.